Interrogation Tuesday continues. Today, it's Dale Swaim joining the show. This is Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back in, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio. Vinny Rattino is going to join us in just a moment. Thanks for making Locked On Brewers your first listen of the day. Dale Swaim, as you heard there at the top and here in the title, of course, is our guest here on Interrogation Tuesday. A heck of a career over 12 years in the big leagues as a player. He's also served as a coach. He served as a manager for the Chicago Cubs. Now he's currently in the Royals organization as a special assistant. He also was their hitting coach when they won the World Series in 2015. And his big moment in Brewers lore, as we talk about here in a little bit, his Easter Sunday walk-off in Team Streak, the 1987 team that started off 13-0, his walk-off homer in a crazy ninth-inning comeback against the Texas Rangers capped off what was the 12th win in that 13-0 start. He retells the story way better than I ever could. I can't imagine what that was like for that team, and watching County Stadium rock in the old highlights is an awesome, awesome sight. So Dale Swaim coming up in just a moment. As we said, he's currently with the Royals, and I want to make something clear. We recorded this before the weekend, before the football games started, and with plans to release it today, of course, and he actually mentions at the end of the interview he is a huge Raiders fan, and if you're watching on YouTube, you'll notice he's wearing his Raiders shirt, and yes, of course, the Bengals beat the Raiders this weekend, so hey, maybe it was a good thing we got him before that game, but he's a huge Raiders fan and also a Packers fan, as we learned while he was here for so long, of course, also served as the interim coach here with the Brewers as well. So he's got such a great connection between his roots in Northern California and his playing and coaching days here in Milwaukee and being a Green Bay Packers fan. And, you know, he's an honorary cheeser, even though he was born in California, and he talks about that as well. A really, really fun interview coming up with Dale Swaim. Really hope you guys enjoy it. First of all, though, we got to talk about Built Bar. As, you know, New Year's resolutions are rolling along. We're, you know, halfway through January already, which is shocking. And, in fact, pitchers and catchers are supposed to report in a month. So, hopefully, they're staying in shape and getting that perfect snack they need with Built Bar. 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar. It's covered in 100% real chocolate. And yet, it's only got 4 net carbs and 17 grams of protein. It actually tastes like something you want to eat. Not like a chemical spill. Not that chalky protein bar taste. It's something you're actually going to grab when you need a sweet treat. The flavors are phenomenal. You've got coconut almond, peanut butter brownie. There's so many different flavors, even salted caramel, okay? Cookies and cream, the list goes on. You can see their entire lineup at built.com. Again, B-U-I-L-T.com. And we've got a promo code for you. If you use promo code LOCKED15, you're going to get 15% off your order. That's right. So just use that promo code at built.com, LOCKED15. For 15% off your order online. And here's the interview.
Dale Swaim, thanks for coming on Locked On Brewers. Dale, I got to tell you, it's a pleasure to have you. If anyone doesn't understand what Dale Swaim brings to this, to the game of baseball, but you know, obviously coming on the show, what he's bringing to this show, it's going to be a smart conversation. Dale, of all the really, really smart people now that is in the game, right? All these Ivy League people that are running organizations, you're not going to find a smarter baseball guy than Dale Swaim. When I first got into big league camp, Dale was a coach in spring training, and I was just hanging on every single word that you were saying. I really just appreciate your tutelage, your mentorship over the years. I know that we've stayed friends, and man, it's just a pleasure to have you on the show. But enough of that. But Dale, I want you to get into just talking about kind of what it was like playing for the Milwaukee Brewers in the in the 80s when you got drafted, and then coming up through the system and just playing on those really, really great teams with a couple of Hall of Famers, right? And Robin Yount and Paul Molitor. And just talk about that a little bit.
Well, thanks for the kind words, Vinny. You're obviously a very easy, coachable guy. You worked really hard, and so that always made it easy for coaches' jobs to do our thing and coach and bring our wisdom on people that love to learn And so you were a very easy pupil, so to speak. And, you know, I had a lot of great times with you, and we had a lot of fun. But, you know, one of the greatest memories I had as a coach was when you got that walk-off hit against Trevor Hoffman, wasn't it?
It was off of Joe Thatcher, actually.
Joe Thatcher. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was a hell of a moment. And obviously I know in your career and you know, you're always one guy that we pulled for, you know, a non-drafted kid and all that. So anyway, I appreciate all your hard work and all the kind words, but yeah, growing up with the Brewers, signing in when I was 18 years old and understanding what the Brewers had just done, coming off the World Series and unfortunately losing to the Cardinals. But, you know, understanding at that time what the Brewers were about, Harvey Keene was just stepping down as a manager. And, you know, he had Robin Yount and Paul Molitors and Jimmy Gantner's, guys that, you know, really taught me everything I know. There's not, you know, there's some people around that have taught me a little bit here and there, nothing like those three guys. So I was very fortunate to come up with an organization that had three guys like that, that took me under their wings and taught me how to play the game, how to do things on and off the field, how to treat people, how to work. Didn't have a whole lot of trouble with the work ethic that was born into me through my dad, but, you know, watching Robin and listening and, you know, it was very easy coming up and learning through those guys. And I just took it through my coaching career and pretty much taught everything those guys taught me. I was very fortunate. So coming up with the minor leagues, we were taught a certain way to do things. And that all bounced down from Robin and those guys, and watching them obviously play. I got to go over to spring training and caddy I think I was 19 years old and took some ground balls with Robin at shortstop. And it was like, you know, it's like, oh my God, I'm, you know, it's Robin. And we both rode dirt bikes and stuff. And so we kind of hit it off a little bit. And, you know, Robin's my best friend today. So we do a lot of hunting now and do a lot of things and still talk baseball. And it's funny talking baseball with Robin. He gets so excited, you know, especially about the new game you know, how the base running's kind of gone to hell and, you know, these kind of things that, you know, it's about the home run and the launch angles and all those things. So you get him started about it, he almost starts hyperventilating. You know, we all know there's a time and place for analytics now and stuff, but you get him started on swing angles and you know, the strikeouts that are going on. It's a lot of fun to talk baseball with him now, because it's you know, such a different game than what we know and what we grew up with. So, but yeah, I was very fortunate to come up and you know, play and you know, we had some really, really good young players that came up at the same time I did. And so we meshed in the 87 season. You know, myself, it was my second year, and BJ Surhoff, Glenn Bragg, Rob Deere, Greg Brock, you know, Ernie
Schroeder. Ryle was a backup catcher on
Schroeder
the team,
was
right?
A backup catcher, you know, played against lefties and did a heck of a job, and Bosio and Plezax and you know, we just had a core young guys that we played together in the minor leagues, and we won a lot and put up some big numbers. Joey Meyer, I think Joey might have won two triple crowns in the minor leagues.
Oh wow!
And had a small little major league career, but one of the best hitters I've ever seen. Billy Joe Robideau, there's a name of the past.
Yeah,
with a great big league name that could really hit. So you know, we were very fortunate. Tom Trebelhorn took over as manager at the end of '86 and threw a few good years. And he was a good man, good baseball guy. Another guy I learned a lot from. Learned a lot of base running from him as well as Robin and those guys. But yeah, we had a heck of a time. Obviously, everybody will look back on the 87 season and for such a young team, had, you know, I think if there would have been a wild card, maybe, or maybe if we just had one more week, we would have gotten the playoffs. We were definitely the best team in baseball the second half of the season.
Which is amazing to say for a team that started 13-0, and we have to talk about your big swing in the 12th win of team streak there to start off the season. I mean, the Easter Sunday walk-off is obviously etched in Brewers lore, and you're right there in the center of it. First of all, were you even thinking you were going to get an AB there in the bottom of the ninth, given you're already down 4-1? Can you take us to what it was like in the dugout in that bottom of the ninth inning?
Well, I think, they had been pitching so good. Texas had some really good, I forget who started the game. I don't know if it was Bobby Witt or Guzman or whoever started the game. Excuse me, but, you know, they had a really good starting staff. And, of course, the wild thing, Mitch Williams in the bullpen. And so things weren't looking really good, even though we had so much momentum going into the game. And then it kind of just it all stopped. And a few things happened in that last inning. And you're like, okay, Joe Blow gets on. He gets on. You know, I got a chance of getting up here. And then, you know, Robbie Deer hit that 3-run homer. You know, the wind was blowing in. I think it would have went out of the stadium if it wasn't blowing in. After a couple swing and misses on some big curveballs from Greg Harris, and then Jimmy walked, and I got a 3-2 count, and Harris tried to backdoor a cutter on a 3-2 count, left it up in the middle of the plate, and I hooked it out of the ballpark. So it was obviously a special day, and it'll always live in one of Brewers' biggest moments, even though it wasn't a playoff game or anything like that, and it was obviously the biggest hit I've ever got in my career. So it was a lot of fun, and it's always good to reminisce about it. And it's amazing. It's almost been 40 years ago.
Wow. No, that was clearly, I mean, I was 7 years old. I used to, you're talking about the lineup that you were just talking about. I used to take batting practice with my dad, and I used to pretend I was Dale Swaim leading off the game and playing shortstop, and then Paul Molitor and Robin. So that was quite the team, and I certainly remember that. 40 years ago is almost 40 years ago. It's unbelievable. I was 7 years old. I'll never forget it. It was such a moment, such a cool moment. But I wanted to just quick talk about, like, so I actually need some clarity from, did you take over Robin's job? How did that work? I mean, I know you guys are best friends, but he was a shortstop, obviously. Then you get drafted as a shortstop in the first round by the Brewers. And then how did that all play out?
Well, nobody would ever take Robin Young's job at shortstop. Right. So that's easy clarification. I guess just to back up, I think it was probably the 84. I was playing third base in Double A, in El Paso. And I think that was the year Robin moved to left field because he had blown his shoulder out so bad he couldn't really throw the ball across the field. He could go out in left field and obviously catch the ball. He was a hell of an athlete and worked real hard to become an outfielder. I can't remember who moved into shortstop or who was in AAA, but Ernie Riles, I think, was the shortstop. One of the guys, I think, started a little bit before Ernie. Ernie took over, and Ernie was probably going to be the shortstop. I started platooning a little bit in 86, my rookie year. Still came up when Molitor pulled his hamstring and was playing third base. And so most of my whole minor league career, I played third base besides rookie ball. So really didn't play shortstop except for rookie ball in 1982. And then Molitor came back and they wanted to keep my bat in the lineup. Me and Ernie started platooning at shortstop. And believe it or not, I was slated to be the utility player in 87. Going into spring training, Ernie got into a barroom little fight and hit a guy over the head with a beer bottle or something like that. I can't be quoted on that.
Sure.
And sliced his finger and tore a ligament in his throwing hand and his finger. And really wasn't available till about the All-Star break. So that's how I became shortstop. And Robin had already moved to the outfield because of his arm. And obviously ended up, when his arm got better, moved to center field. And that's history because he became, I think, a gold glove and won the MVP in center field as well. So everybody always wants to say that or I moved Robin Young. There was nobody moving Robin Young. Besides a really powerful injury to his shoulder is the only thing that moved him away from shortstop. I had actually gone to instructional league and played center field because he had Gumby at second, Robin at short, and Molitor at at third base. So I really didn't have nowhere to go when it was time for me to get to the big league. So I was going to instruction league, playing some outfield, playing, because I ran really well at the time before I shattered my leg. Good enough anyway, not lightning by no means, but well above average runner. So so that's how it all played out. Yeah. And unfortunately that position kind of became a jinx for the Brewers for a little while with Robin's injury, Ernie's injury, my injury, Billy Spires got hurt. So yeah, it was kind of a weird deal, but I learned a lot from Rob. Robin taught me a lot about positioning and really would correct me on a lot of things. Because I really didn't know what I was doing at shortstop. I hadn't played professional baseball at shortstop until the big league. So the positioning part was, I remember one thing, they call it analytics now, and back then it was just common sense to where positioning was, where this guy's going to hit the ball is where you go stand, pay attention, watch where he does. Does he hook the ball? Does he pull everything? Does this pitcher give up balls on the ground to the six hole, to the four, whatever it might be. And you go stand there. It was a simple process. What I'm drawing a blank on double play depth was a big thing, probably for 100 years in the game, the shortstop and the second baseman would crunch up towards second base and leave these two giant holes open in the six hole and the four hole for hitters to hit through. I remember Robin telling me, he says, look, the bottom line is to get the hitter out and not the guy at first base. A double play is a bonus, but you get as much range as you possibly can to make sure at least you get that hitter out and you get one out, and the two is a bonus. So and now you see guys standing in the four holes and everything. And of course they call it analytics, and it's just common sense.
I remember
which that, a lot of analytics is common sense, but they put a big word on it now.
Sure.
Absolutely. I mean, you've seen a lot in this game. You've played in both leagues, you've managed, and you made it to the mountaintop with the Royals as an assistant coach when they won the World Series in 2015. I remember that series so fondly, especially after, obviously making it the year prior and losing to the Giants and then getting right back after there and winning against the Mets. That had to be an incredible experience. What was it like for Kansas City, even not just in 2015, but the whole lead up? It felt like that window was such an exciting run of Royals teams. I know this is a Brewers podcast, but this has to do with you winning a World Series with the Royals.
Well, I was very fortunate. Right after I got fired with the Cubs, I was walking back to my apartment after getting fired and doing the press conference. And my phone rings and it was Ned Yost. And literally an hour after I got fired, he called me and says, hey, I saw on ESPN, you got fired. You want to be my third base coach next year in Kansas City? And I said, well, yeah, sure. Let me call my wife and make sure it's okay, which I knew the answer, obviously. I still wanted to stay in the game. I wasn't ready to retire at the time. And so sure enough, I took the job and doing some research. You're like, wow, this got a chance of being a really, really good team. You had Hosmer and Moustakas and, a bullpen that was starting to just bloom at the time. With all those guys so it was fun to watch those young guys, Hosmer and Moose and Escobar and Lorenzo Cain, guys, two guys that I actually had in Milwaukee before the trade, so to watch those guys bloom and play it, just playing those 2 years, obviously we came up short in game 7 in 14 doing it all over again and then winning the division and winning out and some of them games that we played, there's nothing like playoff baseball. You got to have some luck. I've been in, as a coach, I never got to play in a playoff game as a player, but as a coach, I've been very fortunate for the Red Sox and Yankees and the Royals. So, you got to have some luck. The year before, there was a couple pitches, you can bitch and whine all you want, but there's a couple pitches I thought that changed that World Series around in the Giants' favor that were called by the umpires. But then the next year, we get a break, a huge break against Houston, where we got rattled off like 8 hits in a row. We were down by whatever it was, 5 or 6 in the bottom of the eighth. I mean, top of the eighth in Houston. It was basically over. We were going home. And we rallied off, and then a routine double play ball to Correa hits off the pitcher's glove, turns into topspin, bounces over his glove, and we score a few more, and we ended up winning that game, then won the next night to go to the World Series. So you have to have, breaks, but, the city of Kansas City, what they did, and the fans there, it was probably about as loud as an open-air stadium as you're ever going to have. And it was a lot of fun. We had some great guys. One of my favorite people I've ever coached is Eric Hosmer. And, one of my compliments to the newer player, this year's player, is that he could have played in any era. And that's one of my biggest compliments I can give any player. And Eric Hosmer just solidified that team as a person, as a player, on and off the field, the way he treated clubhouse kids, the way he tipped people, and just a class act that it's hard to come by, that kind of guy. But that play he made when he went home, everybody always asks, oh, what a good play, what a great play, blah, blah, blah. And we're on the bench, and I remember when he took off, I was like, oh, effing way. He's out by a mile. And of course, Duda threw the ball away and we scored and ended up winning. But it was a lot of fun, and I'm very fortunate to be with a bunch of guys like that, and especially do it in a small market team in Kansas City. Dayton Moore is a heck of a general manager, and he puts together, he just builds a team on in that stadium on speed and trying to make contact. That was one of our bigger things. I was a hitting coach at that time. And the bottom line was keep the line moving. And guys, if we ain't gonna walk, we can't strike out. And we didn't walk and we didn't strike out much. So it all kind of came together in the World Series and playoffs when we put the ball in play and make some things happen and make the other team make some plays. And it all worked out. And of course, the bottom line is our bullpen was so good that if we had a lead after the fifth inning, the game was over pretty much 99% of the night. But it was a lot of fun, and it was a great experience.
Great story so far from Dale. Dom here just jumping in real quick, telling you about Bet Online. Of course, we are now on to the divisional round. The Packers are in action this weekend, taking on the San Francisco 49ers. And as the football playoffs roll on, you got basketball, you've got NHL, you've got plenty of other sports going on right now. You can bet on all of them at Bet Online. It's the number one spot for all the sports wagering action here in 2022. They've got a brand new desktop and mobile site, and you can sign up today, and you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus with our friends at BetOnline. All you got to do is use a promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, LOCKEDON, on BetOnline, and you're going to get a 50% welcome. If you drop $100 for your first deposit, you're going to get $50 back for free, just like that. So 100 becomes 150. It's that simple. Football, you got the Packers this weekend. Basketball, Bucks are on a roll. Hockey, boxing, UFC, you name it, they've got it. They've got all the best lines and all the best props for you to bet on at Bet Online. The fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports where the game starts. That's Bet Online. Back to Dale.
Yeah, those were some incredible teams and really, really fun to watch. Obviously, you talk about like the guys like Eric Hosmer being able to gel the team together, and those guys. Some of those guys don't show up all the time analytically, and they aren't valued that much, but they are valued to people like you and obviously the people that are constructing a team, because they do gel the team together. And you do see that right now with the Milwaukee Brewers. In my opinion, I know Dom shares the same sentiment, right? You do have the Low Canes, the Colton Wongs, that might not show up right now analytically and be valued that highly right now, but they really do gel the team together and bring that winning culture. And you have to have that to win. Do you not, Dale?
Yeah, there's no question. You have to have that one or two guys on your team and the people just that they look up to, no matter, like you said, they might not hit 40 home runs or drive in 130 or do all those fun things, but it's just the way they do things and the way they treat people and how they go about their business. Do they play hurt? Do they understand the art of playing hurt and how much it hurts your team when you don't play at 100%? Because in baseball, 162 games, you're not going to play 100%. So it's very You know, I once again, I'll go back to Robin. You know, he always had some great things to say. Robin said, you have to play every single day unless you can't play, because a guy sitting on the bench just isn't as good as you are. It might cost you one game. When you lose the division by one or a wild card by one game, it might have been because you felt like you had to sit out because you had a hangnail, and you know, you cost your team the one run. And those kind of things stick with you. And, you know, back in the day, things were a little bit different as far as getting back on the field and cortisone shots and all those kind of things would get you back on the field a lot quicker than people get back on the yeah. field now. So, but you took a lot of pride in playing every day, and you were scared to death of somebody stealing your job or taking your job. You know, when we first started back then, of course, Robin, you know, I think in 1990, he signed a 3-year, $9 million deal after winning the MVP. So there wasn't a lot of money. It was nice money. You know, my rookie year, I think it was $60,000 for, wow. You know, a rookie playing. Now, you know, with the new base agreement, it'll probably go up to about 700 grand or 650 wow. or something like that. So you couldn't afford somebody to take your job because you had a hangnail or your toe hurt or something like that. So it was a different game, and you had to play because, you know, there was too many people ready to take your job.
This is fascinating, Dale. We could go on all day. I know we were talking off camera and we had to kind of stop ourselves from talking baseball because we could have gone all day. But I do have one last question before we wrap here. I just wanted to know, I do see the Las Vegas Raiders shirt on right there, but being playing in Milwaukee for as long as you did and coming up in the system, I mean, you, and then coaching here in Milwaukee, I mean, you became a huge Packer fan. Everyone loves that about you. I love that about you. The fact that you're a huge Packer fan, you live out in Phoenix or Scottsdale now. Tell us about how you became such a huge Packer fan and why you continue to be.
Well, obviously, I think I spent a total of about 14 years in Milwaukee playing and coaching. And, you know, Packers were always, you know, what they were to me at the time. And then gradually it just started, you know, golly, I was, you know, born and raised in Wisconsin as much as California. So, you know, I spent just as much time in that state as I have in Arizona or California for the most part. But anyway, you know, it probably really started, I can't remember. Matty Smith, who, you know, worked in our clubhouse.
Yeah.
I was his best man at his wedding. he worked in the clubhouse and was our chef, in the clubhouse in Milwaukee. And I was his best man at his wedding. So taking care of his bachelor party, I thought, what a good way to, you know, take about 10 of his buddies, 12, I think might add 12, I'm not sure. And his father, and, took them up to, Green Bay for the whole weekend. We went up on a Friday, hung out at the hotel there and the Tundra Hotel, the big hotel, and just kind of sprawled out in this big giant 2-room suite. And I think you participated one year.
I showed up one year.
Oh, boy. And, so we had a blast and you know, we'd hang out at the casino and then Sundays we would tailgate all day and afterwards. And so that's how it all started, really. I was a little bit of a Packer fan. And for about the next, I don't know, 8-9 years, I started taking about 10 of my buddies, 12 of my buddies, and we'd do that same trip and just have a blast, and really became, you know, a big Packer fan and really rooted. And of course, got to meet Aaron Rodgers a couple of times, threw batting practice to him a couple of times at Miller Park. And you know, so, yeah, so that's kind of how it all developed. And obviously, they're on a heck of a run again. You know, I'll be pulling for my Raiders, but it'd be great if it was the Raiders and Packers in the Super Bowl. I don't know. The Raiders kind of got a little screwed this week, had to play Monday night and then have to play Saturday against the Bengals going on the road. So I don't know how they make those scheduling gaffes, but
of course,
it kind of bothers me. It made no sense from the NFL to make that game Monday night, knowing whoever won was going to play the Bengals on Saturday in Cincinnati, which, yeah, it kind of pisses me off, but it is what it is. And what a hell of a game that was Monday night with the Raiders Chargers.
That was awesome. I mean, shoot, it could have been, you could have had the tie. We're in the back of your mind thinking, oh, just take the knee. It's over. We don't need this field goal.
No, because I actually, one team I really hate is the Chargers. So it just really made perfect me feel good to make them go home. And especially on that kind of game, because I think if you win the game like they did, I think that it at least continues some momentum instead of kissing your sister and then going to the playoffs. I think that kind of win, I know it might took a lot out of them too. Don't get me wrong. An overtime win like that and then having to travel to Cincinnati is going to be a big task. But hey, the Raiders they've been fighters, man. They've had a lot of problems this year, obviously, and overcame a lot to win 10 ball games.
Well, it was great walking down memory lane with you, Dale. We really appreciate you taking some time today. We know you've got hopefully baseball season coming up for all of us. So you're still in the Royals organization. So we wish you guys all of the best. And hopefully we can cross paths in spring training, or maybe you can take some money from Robin on the golf course at some point too. Okay.
All right, Dom. Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I really enjoyed it and appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on, Dale.
All right, Benny. Take care, buddy.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.